Blog Talk Radio.
General Quarters, Security Condition 3.
EQ, Security 3, sir. General Quarters 3, Intruder Alert. EQ 3, Intruder Alert.
Okay, it's not really an intruder. You know this happens every week. Welcome, everyone, once again to Madame Perry Salon. I am your host and cruise director, Madame Perry, also known as Jennifer Perry, and I am delighted to have you here. You know, we have been having so much fun with guests here in Madame Perry Salon. Gosh, we have Frank DeVille, who is actually he's on tour now with the Gap Band, but he's done a lot of writing and producing for Timbaland, Usher, Beyonce, and folks like that, as well as doing music for Brooklyn Nine-Nine and TV shows. Had him coming up. Well, also, of course, our favorite British master of horror, Jasper Bark. We've got coming up Harvey J.K. and It just gets more fun every day. But tonight, and I think you've probably seen me talk about this on all the social media, I am so excited to announce tonight we've got bass player and author Rudy Sarzo. And Rudy, I hope you'll just come on in here to Madame Perry Salon. I know it's a little unusual in here.
Hello, madam. How you doing?
I am doing great. How are you?
I'm doing wonderful here in just a little bit overcast Los Angeles, California.
Okay. Well, you know, as because I know that you do a lot of you're working with digital animation now, aren't you?
Yeah, not as much as I've done in the past, but yes, I dabble in that, of course.
Yeah, okay. Because I meant to tell you that when you come in here to Madame Perry Salon, you know, people say, cause, as you can transport, because you're, you know, a pretty hip, digital, modern kind of guy, that it's like coming in. Some people describe it as being like a genie's bottle when they drop in here. So,
you know, I actually met Genie a few weeks ago. I was doing a one of those Comic-Con conventions. It's called the Chiller Theater in New Jersey, in Persephone. And she was one of the special guests, and it was such a thrill to take a photo with her and meet her. Yeah.
I saw your picture with her, yes. I might have put it up in the slideshow, I'm not sure. But I might post it around. I saw the picture, yeah, because I thought, I haven't even told you. But, yeah, a lot of guests, when they come in here, they'll talk about what's their favorite cushion to sit on and the genies. And when I saw the picture of you with Barbara Eden, I thought, oh, there you go, there you go.
That was
Rudy Sarzo, I'm so excited. I'm so excited to have you here at Madame Perry Salon, and thank you so much for sharing your time with us. And we were going to talk about, first, the thing I mentioned in your book, Off the Rails. And for one thing, I read a lot. It's a very well-done book, and it's like having a little bit of rock as well as generational history in here.
Yeah, I wanted to be not only to answer the number one question that I get asked when I travel around the world, which is, what was it like to play with Randy Rhoads? But I also wanted to be a time capsule of a certain period in the music industry that we'll probably never see again, you know, just because of the way things are, you know, with digital distribution, you know. And when there used to be an actual music industry infrastructure that cater to the music of our genre, not just, you know, what I'm talking about is, you know, just rock and roll, you know, in general, not just pop music or urban, which is what seems to be the focus today with the record labels.
That's exactly the way, that's a perfect description for it. It's like a bit of a time capsule that you can, well, we may not be able to time travel, but with But you gave us a time capsule to visit, and you really, I think that's one of the things I enjoy, because I remember all those days and the concerts and, you know, growing up in Atlanta, you know, I had opportunities, you know, to see a lot of great concerts and people coming through. In fact, that's why when I can't hear somebody now, like at the grocery store in the cash register, I'll say, I'm sorry, honey, but I'm old enough to have heard all the good bands, so I can't hear a thing you're saying now. You know,
yeah. Yeah,
my mother warned me, but
I'd
go again anyway.
You know, a couple of my favorite venues ever was the Omni Center in Atlanta.
Yes.
and the Fox Theater in Atlanta.
Oh, yes. Yeah,
wonderful crowd,
are...
because, you know, you get the Southern hospitality, but also it's a big city, so you get that cosmopolitan, you know, reaction. People are very sophisticated, but they're very warm at the same time.
Oh, well, thank you. We certainly hope so. Now, I have two callers here. Well, let's see, one of them just had to drop for a moment. Maybe they'll come back. But I've already got callers calling to talk to you. So if you don't mind, welcome to Madame Perry's Salon, and here with Rudy Sarzo. And whoever was the other caller, please call back. I just didn't get to you. Oh, there they are. Rudy, are you ready for other people to come in and talk to you right away?
Always.
All right. Okay, here's my other caller, and welcome again to Madame Perry's Salon. And who do we have here? We'll start with 213. Area code.
Aha. Hey, that's me. This is Frank, the guy that you were just talking about who was on your show 2 weeks ago. How's
oh
it going?
Oh, my gosh. Yes. Frank. See, Frank, I always speak lovingly of you. Yeah, Frank. Rudy, this is Frank. I was just saying that he's on tour with the Gap Band. I think you're en route to go rehearse with the Gap Band now, aren't you? Or somebody.
Actually, I'm going to rehearse with one of my side projects with them. We do some hip-hop, and it's actually some of the original members from the Gap Band. It's Charlie Wilson. And so that's where I'm heading down to right now, and I wanted to catch your show a little bit. I don't know Rudy personally. I think that we might be LinkedIn contacts, but I know that on his description of who he is, obviously he's a world-class bass player, author, and also mentor. So I just wanted to ask him a little bit about that, because I think someone with that kind of influence that's you know, so important with people coming up in the industry, or like when I was talking on your show about people trying to find their own way, you know, and see the way through the industry. So do you have anything to say about that, or comments? Or?
Well, me? Yeah. Hey, Frank, it's a pleasure to meet you, by the way. I'm a huge fan of the Gap Band. Oh, it's
yes.
Great music. Love it. Anyway, getting back to the mentorship, I mean, you know, I've been doing this for over 35 years now, and there seems to be kind of like an internal clock that we as human beings have, that once you get to be, you know, of a certain age, you feel the need. It's actually a need to start giving back and sharing your experiences, you know, with the younger generation, you know. And I found a vehicle for that, which is one of the vehicles, but it seems to be my main vehicle, which is called Rock and Roll Fantasy Camp. And what we do is we get people from all walks of life and even age brackets. We get kids, we get adults, and they come to the camp. And it's my job, you know, to either help them re-identify or identify themselves with their musical identity, to reconnect with that or connect for the first time. Because, you know, some people only think of themselves as musicians if they happen to be making a living, you know, from playing music. And I got to tell you, I spent decades of my life not making a penny. But if you ask me what I was, you know, I was a starving musician, struggling musician. But nevertheless, I was a musician, you know. So it is very important for those of us who actually play an instrument, you know, whatever it is, even vocalists, that's a musical instrument, your voice, you know, we are musicians. And it doesn't matter if you work in the daytime doing whatever, if you still are able to communicate, you know, with others through your music, you are a musician, you know, and it's very important for all of us to always support each other at whatever level of our career or our musical experience or journey we happen to be in. And so, you know, I mean, it's more elaborate. It's deeper than what I'm just talking about right now, but it's definitely something that it's such a rewarding experience for me to be able to share and give back.
Yeah, I think I was just at a meeting, actually it's a musician's meeting, sort of like an AA thing. And, you know, you can't really give something until you have it.
Yeah.
So it's awesome that when you do have it, that you're able to give it away, you know. And some of the, I really relate to what you're saying about spending decades and not making a penny, and then all of a sudden, you know, things start to happen for you. And it's really interesting. Los Angeles is such a kind of surface town. People come out here for, you know, to fulfill their thing and for their destiny and their career. But there's really a lot of struggling people who would love to just have input, you know, from someone like you or anyone who has credibility in the industry. And I think, like I said, you know, when we have influence, that's the best thing that we can do. You know, I heard Carlos Santana say, man, unless you're doing something for somebody else, you're not doing anything. So
absolutely.
I think a lot of us in the industry need to learn that.
Absolutely. And, you know, one key element for me was that I found my spiritual center before, while I was still a starving musician. And I think that those people that have survived the industry or the journey that is all about, all the, you know, all the ups and downs and all of the pitfalls that actually come up once in a while, are those who are actually spiritually centered. You know, whatever you believe in, you know, you got to believe in something because, you know, music is really, well, come on, you know, we can't really see the note. What we create, it's not a visual product. It's actually something that we hear. It's vibrations. It's all about vibrations, you know, and there's nothing more magical and something that you have to put faith on. That it's actually music. Music is the ultimate experience of actually being able to relate through vibrations with other human beings.
Yeah.
If I can just interrupt just a moment, and I'm so glad you're bringing this up because, you know, as an entertainment publicist, Frank, which I told you I am, I've tried to tell when I have clients or people who take my webinars on how I'm promote this DIY publicity for musicians and authors. I always say, if you want something from somebody, see what you can do for them. Do something for them. If you want to get yourself booked into a club or have your book signing in a bookstore, what can you do to make that manager or owner look like a star to the person that they report to? Like promote your own gig, bring people in, do something to help somebody else. And some people never get that. But I remember too, Frank, when I first talked to you before you came on Madame Perry Salon, I mean, and I'm talking about, you know, I'm telling people, because, you know, Rudy's so accomplished, you're so accomplished. I'm saying, one of the last things you said before we got off the phone was you said to me, I don't know if you remember this, I hope you don't mind me saying it, but you said,
absolutely.
By the way, thanks for the you said, thanks for the opportunity to be on the show, and if there's anything I can do to advance your brand, let me know. And I thought, okay, this man's gone platinum six times over, et cetera, et cetera, and you're asking me what you can do to help me. And I get the feeling, you know, you and Rudy are similar spirits in that vein. You know, you're both spiritually centered and both generous enough to know. I've always found, back when I had a TV show, even in the 80s, I always found the guests that had the most success were the ones that came around and were nice to my crew and offered to help and were always helpful to someone else. It does make the hugest difference, I think, as far as the kind of energy that goes out and returns.
Yeah, a total attitude of gratitude. To me, it's what, you know, that's what I like to live by.
Yeah, and you know what, too, when you were talking about the decades, you know, unless you overcome something and really work for it and take ownership of it, like, you'll never get it. You'll never have that spiritual awakening when it's handed to you or, you know, I don't know, that's just what I found, you know.
No, absolutely, yeah.
You
got to
really
absolutely.
Work for it.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And while I've got you guys here a second, I've also got two more people that have dropped in here at Madame Perry Salon. Let me introduce them too, if I have a comment or question. And, by the way, Rudy, you are Cuban American. So I also put out that if people can call in with questions or preguntas.
Yeah,
I've watched your interviews.
Actually, I was born in Cuba, so I am I'm Cuban born, raised in the United States.
I watched one of your interviews with Elizabeth Espinosa, Latina Sin Limitas. Yeah,
yes.
So I watched that interview as well. So that's hoping for, hey, call in any language. We talk to you. Okay, so who else do we have that's dropped in here to talk with Madam Perry, Rudy Sarzo, Frank DeVille? We'll start with 267 because you've been on here a long time.
Hi, Rudy.
Hello, who's
it's,
this?
It's Brian Dingaman calling from suburban Philly. How are you?
Hey, how you doing, Brian? I'm blessed.
Hey, the Showtime documentary on Quiet Riot, did you see it, and what's your reaction to it?
Well, I was in it, so I saw that. You know, to be honest with you, it's about a very significant part of my life, so certain things are actually painful for me to watch, and
yeah.
You know, such as the downfall from the heights that we achieved, you know, as a group. And so that to me was a bit tough to sit there and just watch it and detach myself because I just couldn't, you know. It's my life, you know. I think that is a wonderful documentary. Frankie and Regina, they did a wonderful job producing it and directing it, and I'm so glad that it's actually out and people can watch it and experience it.
When you joined Whitesnake, they had already had a lot of exposure on radio and MTV. What was going on at the time that you joined that group?
Actually, I was asked to join the band right after I left Quiet Riot in 1985, but since Whitesnake was the opening band for Quiet Riot during the 1984 Condition Critical tour, I was very familiar about the friction between some of the members of the band, and I just didn't want to go from one situation to another situation. So I declined to join at the time, and then by the time that I was asked again to join Whitesnake, it was just basically David Coverdale left in the band from the old, formation of the group. So I felt that it was going to be a safer situation as far as chemistry with the individuals within the group. You know, so it was a brand new band. None of the people that recorded the 87 record remained in the group, you know. So, I had a wonderful time. It was great touring the 87 record and then coming back and recording the Slip of the Tongue record. And as a matter of fact, I toured with Whitesnake up until 1994. That was the last time.
As a music journalist, I had the privilege it was kind of this year and last year where I had an email interview with Frankie, who was still keeping the Quiet Riot brand going. And one of the questions I asked him is, what was one of your biggest Spinal Tap moments? And I'm wondering if you can corroborate this story. It was a show, I think it was you and Carlos were supposed to come up on these risers from underneath the stage, but the motor got stuck, and you could only see your heads above the stage line. Did that actually happen?
Yeah, it did. Actually, it was the three of us, Kevin, Carlos, and myself.
It was Kevin, Carlos, and you.
We would appear on stage at the very top of this huge riser that we had on during the production of the Condition Critical tour. But as it happened, whoever designed the staging decided to power the elevator with the Black & Decker drills. That was it. The drills were driving the chain that would pull us up. And obviously, you know, they will blow up on the halfway up there, you know. And so actually happened multiple times, not just one time.
Oh,
it
boy.
Happened every other show. We had to climb out of the of a hole that we were going
with the pods and spinal tap.
We were going up, you know, yeah. So it did happen. Yeah.
That's a good one, Brian. That is, and Brian's also a musician as well as a music journalist. So he's my buddy from Philly. That's a great story, and yet you're still here to tell it. No one was electrocuted or anything. That's always good.
No,
yeah,
that's
right.
Always, something like that. You always go, yeah. As long as you're all still there, I think that went well. Also, I have one more caller from Mayans. Who is from 775 area code? Welcome to Madame Perry Salon and the
backstage
party, isn't it?
Yeah. Hi, Madame Perry. This is Rick Cornell. I've been on your show a few times. I got the message on Facebook, call in, so I'm just following orders.
Hey, now wait just a minute. I've got a panel here that can tell me. I'm sure all you guys have had some kind of legal situation somewhere in your life, haven't you? DeVille? Yeah, I'm not going to ask you what they are. That's your business. Okay. DeVille, Rudy, Brian. But my friend Rick Cornell here, he is a suspense author, and a really good one, a suspense author, and he's also an attorney out in Las Vegas, where
Reno.
We're
going to
be
anyway.
An attorney. Reno, excuse the heck out of me. Reno, thanks.
Oh, no, that's all right.
And also sings opera. So, Rick, I'm so glad to have you here.
Oh, sure.
So,
hopefully, it's 4:20 my time, so hopefully... if anybody calls in, it'll be because they've got $20,000 to retain me and they just can't wait. But, you know, otherwise, I didn't realize that I was talking to such a celebrity. So I apologize for asking stupid questions, I guess. But what you said was that Rudy is both a musician and an author, and my question to you is if you're writing about something that isn't about music directly, like your memoirs of being in Whitesnake, how do you incorporate music into what you do write, I guess?
That is a very good question. I've only had the need, because I needed to write the book about Randy, because in order to answer all the questions that people wanting to find out a lot around the world when I travel, what was it like to play with Randy, which is the only reason why I wrote the book. So that drove me to spend about a year and a half out of my life writing about, a page a day, a good page, something that's really going to go in the book. And, you being an author, it's a very lonely process, and when everybody's out there on tour, because I did it in a year and a half, and I went through three bands. I started when I was playing with Quiet Riot, then I went on tour with Yngwie Malmsteen, and finally I finished the book when I was a member of Dio, and I went through two laptops, So it's quite, when everybody's out on the road and you're in your room typing away, trying to, go to the next page, nobody's there with you. But then again, what's really rewarding about the experience is that in my case, I had Randy Rhoads alive in my imagination once again, because I had to revisit everything where I had been. And, and when you write something that is your memoirs, it's basically, the personal inventory. I for example, every year when I do my taxes, I look at it all, all the old bills and from the year, and it's like, oh, yeah, I remember being there and buying this or buying that. So, basically, it's the same thing. As when you write memoirs, you revisit all those corners of your memory, and you find some things that might be disturbing, but most of the time, like in my case, it was a joyful experience to be back.
Hopefully
there
it's not a memoir that will get the IRS too awfully interested.
No, not at all.
We don't need the IRS to be very interested in anything, right?
Rick, like some of your books, if you don't, I wonder sometimes how much of your stories have actually come from actual cases, and is anybody going to come after you like that? I worked in the courthouse once upon a time. I know.
Yeah, that's always a worry or a concern, but so far it hasn't been. But the next story that I write will be based, will tack closer to a true case that I actually handled. So anyhow, out here we also have a musician who's recently written his memoirs, and he's going through the same publisher I went through, and that's Floyd Sneed, who was the original drummer of Three Dog Night. So be interesting to read your book, Rudy, and to read his and see the similarities and differences, because, of course, you're talking about two bands in two different time frames, so there's bound to be differences, but there's bound to be similarities, too.
As far as Three Dog Night goes, I grew up listening to their all their records. They were a major influence in my in the soundtrack of my life, and I happened to befriend it through the years, Jimmy Greenspoon, who recently passed away, and Chuck Negron. As a matter of fact, I've been doing shows with the Guess Who. And a few weeks ago, we actually played with Three Dog Night, Danny Hutton and Alsop, the guitar player, is one of the remaining founding members of the group.
Oh, wow. Terrific.
Yeah.
Well, when you think about it, now Rudy's book is back to the title, the full title is Off the Rails, Aboard the Crazy Train in the Blizzard of Oz. And if you listen at the very beginning, because that's when, because he was playing, Randy Rhodes was in Blizzard of Oz first, and then he recommended Rudy when they needed a bass player. And so it was your friend, and it's but if you, I don't know if you heard this in the beginning, got that in the beginning, Rick or Brian, but also the idea of having, Sharon Osbourne as a manager, that was a tougher thing. I think there was one part where you were talking about how Sharon was working every day, and yeah, she had to be really tough because you got to deal with, I know me as a band, when I was a band leader, I got to take care of the musicians, but I've also got to deal with the people who all of a sudden don't want to, act like they had a contract or didn't want to pay or something, whereas I'm going, like, I can't send these musicians back home without any money. They'll never get out the door to play with me again. So you got to take care of everybody all around. But
being
he was
a woman
saying,
a
woman manager. Yeah,
being
a female manager.
But
she
had to be.
Yeah, she was amazingly tough. She could be the sweetest lady, but when it came down to taking care of business, she was magnificent. She'd make sure that the band and, when I say the band, because back in the day, it was really a band. You had Ozzy, but then, there was a lot of respect for Randy Rhodes and, of course, Tommy Aldridge, who was our drummer. I was a brand new kid on the block, so I wouldn't even consider myself in that league at the time. But she really took care of all of us. We all traveled together. We were all on the same bus, and we got to see each other 24/7, not only on the road, but when I would go off the road, I would stay with them at Sharon's family's estate in Benedict Canyon.
Mm. Wow.
And when you said in there, you said she was such a hard worker. You said if that whole scene was taking place today, she would have a laptop and a cell phone and be handling things all the time. And you said, you and Randy wouldn't be hanging around the pool. You'd be have the laptop going, writing songs and creating on that. But you think about it, she didn't have, you guys didn't have all that. You had to do it the old-fashioned way.
She would stay in her room whenever there was a day off to make sure that everything, was taken care of for the following gigs. She would stay in her room. There was no cell phone, so she had to be in her room. And I would walk by and see trays of room service because she would not leave the room. She would just stay there and take care of business.
Looking back on your career, do you, I mean, meeting up with icons like Randy Rhoads and Ozzy Osbourne and so forth, I mean, do you feel like there was some sort of kismet or spiritual force or something that just was beyond your power that would basically cause you to hook up with people like this, or no? How would you describe that?
Yeah, absolutely. Total higher spiritual power. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And like I was in a few minutes ago, I was talking a little bit about it, touching upon the fact that I had just reached my spiritual center right before I got the call. You know, I put it this way. I was sleeping on the floor in Kevin DuBrow's apartment, you know, about to turn 30 years old, and just made peace with God that as long as my fingers were moving, I was going to keep playing and trying. You know, there was no going back. There was no turning back. I was going to be in L.A., and I was going to make it as a musician. Now, what I mean by making it was actually that I could actually feed myself, you know, and get myself off the floor someday, you know, and actually sleep on a mattress, you know. That, to me, was making it. You know, to me, was making it was like, you know, I was going to make a living just like everybody else, but doing it through music. It wasn't about buying mansions or you know, exotic cars and whatever that came along with it. It was just about the, you know, the necessary, you know, things in life.
Right. Well, hearing this makes me think of a book that I read, and maybe you did too, Madam Perry, called The Soul's Code by Robert Hillman, where he talks about the daemon, which I'm going to misdescribe it, but kind of that inner spirit, that inner sense of this is what you're meant to do. And he tells the story of Ella Fitzgerald, who was supposed to go to some opera gig and ended up instead at the Apollo Theater in Harlem trying out as a jazz singer. Sometimes the universe just kind of goes that way and puts you where you were meant to be. I guess that would be a good way to describe it. It sounds
not only,
like that's what happened with you.
Yeah, it's not only about where you were meant to be, but you have to be ready. You have to be ready when you are at that place and time that you're talking about,
right?
To handle it. You know, you have to be ready for, you know, you know what? And it's really interesting that you mentioned that, because even today, after doing this for over 35 years, I find that every single situation that I enter, I still approach it the same way. I never rest on my past achievements.
Mm-hmm.
To me, it's like I'm starting all over again every single day. To me, it's like, you know, I was having this conversation lately with somebody about auditioning, and I said, man, I audition every single day of my life.
Yeah. It's every day is a
wow.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
It is.
It is.
It's true.
Guys, if you could hold up your... I'm sorry, Rick. If you could hold just a minute. If you're listening live, we're talking to musician Rudy Sarzo and talking about, first of all, his book, Off the Rails, Aboard the Crazy Train and the Blizzard of Oz, as well as his work with Quiet Riot, Blizzard of Oz, Whitesnake, Yngwie Malmsteen, and also I've got one of my favorite producers and musicians, Frank DeVille in the house, as well as music journalist and musician, Brian Bingaman, attorney and author, and God knows what else he does on the side up there in Reno, Rick Cornell. Yes, thank you. If you guys will hold just a moment for me, 60 seconds. I'm not going to mute your mics, but just 60 seconds, so don't say anything about me or anyone else. For my sponsor, Sky McKenna. You can tell the ones that have been here before, can't you, Rudy? The ones that know their way around, like Brian. Okay, we have a sponsor. Again, our sponsor this week is Intuitive Life Coach Sky McKenna. Just listen to this.
Are you where you want to be in your career, your marriage, your relationships? Have you tried and tried to achieve your goals and failed? With a little help, the best possible outcome for any situation is achievable. I want to introduce you to Sky McKenna. Sky is a professional, results-oriented counselor, creative strategist, and intuitive and master astrologist who has provided counseling and guidance to people just like you worldwide for two decades. Sky McKenna will help you achieve your full potential. Take that first step right now for a better, happier, and successful life. Contact Sky McKenna at intuitivelifeguidance.com. With Sky McKenna, you will receive clear, honest, understandable guidance, a creativity boost, and connection to answers you already have within you. Reach out to Sky McKenna right now and change your life. intuitivelifeguidance.com.
All right. Thanks to Sky McKenna, the Intuitive Life Coach, for being our sponsor again this week. Hey, you know, funny thing, though, this is not to do with life coaches, but I might have mentioned this to you, Frank, that in the last few months, I've got a lot of my guests have been from because of their publicist or if they've their publishing company. And yet every time someone convinces me to book a psychic on the show, okay, did you get this, guys? Psychic. Every time I get a psychic booked on the show, they always forget. They never show up on the first time. We have to, like, book two or three times. Just wondering. No, I didn't. The first time I thought it was just like, the second or third time, it was like, I think one of them's calling me, you know, from, I think, what, Simon & Schuster or somewhere. I said, oh, no, you really want to put this guy on your show? Okay, that's great. And every time, so then they go, oh, well, all right, we're so sorry. I go, well, no, I'm not mad. I just figured it probably, there had to be a reason for it. Maybe a different kind of vibration they're running on. I figured I'd just, you know, I'm a living.
A psychic who doesn't use a date planner?
That's what I'm saying. Anyway. They're so far away. Even the guy that did the, and I like this guy, Luis Manero. Very nice guy to have on. Once I finally got him in here, his thing was he's the number one. He's the world expert on out of body experiences. And I said, you know, Louise, it took me three times for you to show up, but I kept telling people, can't afford a vacation, but sick of having a staycation. Hey, listen to Luis Manero and learn how to have an out of body vacation. So, but anyway, it's. I'm just saying. I'm a groove and let groove kind of gal. You know that. So I just kind of thought, well, there's got to be a reason for it. But anyway, so we're back here with Bajista Rudy Sarzo.
Hello, Madam Perry.
So, Rudy, hey, hello. So, you know, I really like, it seemed like Randy Rhodes was, which, like you said, was the main focus purpose when you started this book. Randy just seemed so much like family with you.
Yeah.
I just like a brother-like relationship.
You know, it's, I mean, it's back in the day, there was no distractions, you know, as far as we're like what we have today. You know, today, of course, you know, we have the smartphone. Everybody has a smartphone, which means that not only are you connected with what's going on at the moment within your environment, but you're connected with basically the whole world. You know, I mean, that's how you and I got connected, you know, through Facebook, I believe, you know. And back in the day, we didn't have any of that. It was just a band, you know, just basically the four musicians with Sharon in the bus and going from town to town. And whether you like it or not, you know, you became a family. That's it. And you better like it because this is your new family. This is the family that has picked you. You know what I mean? So I knew Randy from playing in the Randy Rose version of Quiet Riot. And so he knew my values as a musician, as a human being, and also my abilities to play, you know. So when it came time, and they just had like 10 days to find a bass player to go on the road with, Randy kept telling them, listen, you know, Rudy is the guy that I trust. Trust is, to me, is, you know, the older I get and the longer I do this, to me, the most important thing is to play with people that you trust at every single level. You're going to trust them as professionals, and you're going to trust them as friends, that when you guys go on the road, there's not going to be any drama. There's not going to be any problems, right. Any consequences. Mm-hmm. It's just everybody's going to go up there and do the best gig possible and then go on to the next one, which is what Randy and, you know, recommended me for, because I had no credentials when I joined Ozzy. I was just a guy that had played with Randy in Quiet Riot that was sleeping on the floor. That's all I had. I had never been on tour. I had never been on a major tour. I had never recorded a major album. Nothing. So out of all the people that they could have called, they trusted on Randy's recommendation that he recommended me. So they said, okay, Randy, we're going to take your friend Rudy. And that was it. And then from that point on, I had to prove myself. You know, and for the last 35 years, I've been building my trust factor. And it's one thing, if you fail, doesn't matter how long you've been trustworthy, if you have that one moment where you fail to be trustworthy, it's over. It's over. You have to be trust. Yeah, you have. You cannot. Nothing can fall through the cracks. You know, and I believe that the longer, you know, all of us do what we do, the more imperative it becomes to become to remain trustworthy.
I think that's really true, mm-hmm. regardless of what you do for a living.
Absolutely,
I really do.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely, but you know, I find that because of the dynamics of being a professional musician, there's so many areas where you can actually fail at being trustworthy. For example, you know, if let's say you work just like a day job, right? Let's say you work at Subway making sandwiches. You know, it doesn't have the complexities of being a musician, because being a musician is basically, are you gonna get on the plane to make it to the next gig? You're not gonna miss your flight. You're gonna get to rehearsal and know every single song before you get there. Rehearsal is not about learning songs; it's about getting the band together. You know, are you gonna be sober? Are you gonna have a hangover mm-hmm. from the night before? Are you going to be on anything? You know what I mean? I know musicians that have actually disappeared in the middle of a tour. They couldn't find them. You know, not only they didn't miss the lobby call. No, they're gone. They went home. They didn't tell anybody. You know what I mean? There's so many areas that a musician can really mess up on stage, you know. And then you have to play every single song. It has to be flawless. You know, we musicians don't have the luxury, like let's say athletes have. Let's say you're Derek Jeter. You go up to bat and you strike out four times in a game. The next day, I guarantee you, Yankee Stadium is still going to be sold out. You know, and the days. But a musician, if the band has a bad night, next time they come to town, half the people that were there to witness that bad show are not coming back. They're not.
That's true, and you know, I'm sure that DeVille and Brian have a story like this. I mean, even you know, when I had my jazz combo, because I always told somebody,
yeah.
I said, look, if it's the Jennifer Perry combo, so I say, you know, if your name is on it, you take the fame and the blame. But what that means, you know, is like, well, I had a drummer for a while that was just drinking from beginning to end, but he brought this little coffee mug. And then we started noticing his meter was getting way off. And I said, look, if you play badly or somebody else plays badly, if you play well, if you do great, you play well, your solos are all out of sight, then it's like, dang, that drummer's good, that bass is, their guitar is good, their keyboard's good. But if you do that, if you go sloppy and the meter's off, then it's like, oh, Jennifer Perry, nah, I saw them. Don't go back. You know, because then they remember, the whole thing. It's like going to say, well, maybe she's got somebody different this time. But that's the way.
Yeah, because once you put your name on that brand, it's your responsibility to pick the best musicians possible. You know, the people that are going to be the most trustworthy for the audience to come in and pay to see the show and trust you that you're going to have a band or a production that's going to be flawless.
Mm-hmm.
Rudy, I really appreciate your honesty and candor in the Madame Perry's Salon that we've done. I interviewed Lita Ford earlier in the fall, and of course she was managed by Sharon Osbourne And this, of course, is in the late 80s. And she ended up having to fire Sharon because there was this really dramatic domestic incident where Ozzy had almost choked Sharon to death. She actually died and came back to life. You know, she had to be revived. What was the status of Ozzy and Sharon's marriage when you knew them? Were they still in the honeymoon phase? What was happening at that time in their lives and their relationship?
Well, they weren't married yet. As a matter of fact, Ozzy was married to Thelma, his former wife. And so Sharon was the manager of the band. That's why she traveled with us, you know. And they got married July 4th, 1982. So I was with the band. I left shortly after that because Randy had passed away already. Randy passed away in March. They got married in July. And it was too painful for me to remain playing, you know, with the group, you know. And I wanted a fresh start. So by September or October, I actually left and joined Quiet Riot. Rejoined what was known as the Metal Health version of Quiet Riot.
Yeah, wow. Yes, indeed.
You know, I think that's what, you know, we were talking earlier, Rudy, about how musicians, you don't have the luxury of that some of the different job does. If they mess up or if they need to take time off or whatever, you know, you guys were traveling together and working together, and plus the fact that you and Randy spent your time off either sightseeing or doing different things when you had some time off while you were on that Blizzard of Oz tour. But because you were on the tour when Randy died in the airplane accident, and Rachel, too, was the makeup artist that was with you, also died. Am I correct?
Yeah.
You don't have, like you were saying, it was just too painful to keep on because you guys didn't have, you were right, you didn't have time to grieve. You didn't have time to, like somebody, if you had a family or member or friend die while you were at a day job or something, you know, a desk job, you can take some time off. You can take some bereavement time or some personal time and have some time by yourself. But you didn't. You still got to go. And you've got the kind of job where you can't sit in a corner and work. You have to be on.
Absolutely.
Doing your thing. So you don't have – I think people tend to – you know, that's one of the luxuries that you don't have in a career like yours, is that you have to be on and you don't go. And especially as close as you – it would be like – it was like I would imagine a family – you know, he was your friend, but like a brother to you as well, and it would be so difficult.
What happened with that situation was that we took 10 days off to regroup. Sharon did not want to take any time off time. Actually, it wasn't even off because we were auditioning and rehearsing with guitar players and attending services in Los Angeles for that 10-day period. Mm-hmm. You know, we had to attend Randy's and Rachel's, you know, services. And we needed to get back on the road to keep Ozzy occupied because if they would have pulled off, canceled the tour, Ozzy would have just gone home and drank himself to death. So the strategy was just to keep him going, keep him moving, you know. And it was a daily intervention, basically, you know, spiritually for him to handle what had just happened. So, yeah, we didn't have time to mourn because mourning might have been a dangerous thing for me, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not saying that we were not in pain. Of course we were, and we were mourning individually. Inwardly?
How big are they? Just a little. Yeah, we could probably use a boat.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you know, I remember when some people may be listening to you and remember this, when Michael Hutchence of NXS died, you know, and his close friend Bono wanted to go, but he, you know, he's on tour, and people realize how much money too, because this was, of course, a much more expensive operation than probably what you guys had going at the time. But people forget that also you can't just leave the job. You've got too many people dependent on the money and too many contracts involved and too many people who's a lot of people dependent on you.
I've been with musicians whose mother or father has passed away on the road, and I've witnessed a lot of tears and a lot of crying, a lot of sadness, but nobody went home. Nobody went home, because what happens is you have the responsibility of the whole tour, and this is something that it's in the back of every musician's mind. It's always been in the back of my mind, going on the road, and what if something happens at home, you know? You just have to deal with it and keep moving forward, you know. I mean, in the case of Randy, it was traumatizing. It was shocking. And 10 days was not enough to take off. I mean, we could have just basically taken off the whole tour, canceled the whole tour, or rescheduled the tour. But there was a need to keep Ozzy occupied. When you're talking about Ozzy, you're not talking about the average human being as far as decisions and what's going on in his mind. You know, he's a very unique individual, and when a situation like that arises, you cannot treat it like you would be treating anybody else.
Yeah. Rudy, if you don't mind my asking, how old were you when Randy passed?
In 82, I was 31 years old.
Yeah, that being that young and going through that the first time, I mean, I don't know that anything in life really prepares you for it, but especially when you're that young, that must have been incredibly difficult.
Yeah, it still is. You know, recently there was a release of a DVD called Speak of the Devil, which is actually the Diary of a Madman tour, but with Brad Gillis on guitar. And I was asked by the production company that released the DVD to write the liner notes.
Wow.
And so they, you know, they sent me, and I hadn't watched the show in, you know, in 35 years, basically, more or less 35 years by the time it was released. And I looked at it, and I realized that what the show was about, it wasn't just about a rock show. It was about the pain and the determination to rise above what we were suffering from the recent loss of Randy on that show. I mean, for me, you know, we played, you know, we did the Diary of a Madman show at the Garden, in the Madison Square Garden, about 2 weeks after Randy's crash. I gotta tell you, I spent the whole show crying. I did.
Like that.
All I could do was just put my head down and, you know, look at the floor and just like play. I wasn't even playing music. I was just playing notes. You know, I mean, I was just trying to survive the show. You know, and I got to tell you, it that night it was like a wake. Everybody in the audience had banners, you know, with like, you know, God bless Randy, and, you know, we love you, we miss you, and stuff like that. And I spent the rest of the tour just like that, just looking down. As a matter of fact, when I originally watched that video of what became known as Speak of the Devil DB, you know, live performance, I saw myself, and I said, I have become a robot on stage. I wasn't playing music anymore, you know. And I'm talking about the first time that I watched it 35 years, you know, back in 1982 when it was first edited. I looked at it, and that was my deciding factor for leaving Ozzy and joining Quiet Riot. The complete unknown. Nobody thought that Quiet Riot was ever going to achieve anything. But I needed to get back the joy of playing music in my life again, even if it meant leaving the biggest band in the world you know, Ozzy Osbourne at the time for the total unknown, for the, like, you, nobody wanted to manage Quiet Riot, nor nobody thought Quiet Riot was going to sell 50 copies, you know, but it didn't matter to me. I wanted to be happy again, you know.
I think that was for your soul, it sounds like.
Yeah, I had to.
I had to.
There was no preconceived notions of this is going to be an incredible, successful band or a record was going to reach number one. No. No, nothing. None of that.
Yeah. No, hearing your story makes me think about a time that I sang at a friend's funeral, and it was exactly what you're describing, you know, a dear friend that just had to shut my mind down, not look at anybody, keep my focus very narrow, and it's like you say, be robotic just to get through it. And
yeah,
to have to do that professionally night in and night out for a while, I have to think is extraordinarily difficult.
Oh, so difficult. And it, just to think about Ozzy, you know, having to open his soul and sing every single night with that much pain, you know, emotional pain.
Yeah. Just to add a level of painful difficulty to it. Yeah, that must, gosh, just incredible.
It is incredible. Yes, absolutely.
That's a powerful thing. I never hadn't thought about that either. So if you've listened now, and I'm so grateful to you, Rudy, you've to share so much time with me, and all of us, all of you here. So for people still listening, remember, the book is called Off the Rails, and you've got to get this book. You've heard something about it now, and it's, like I said, it's extremely well written, and it is a time capsule. It's a slice of history in so many ways. But so before we go, though, and also while Brian and Rick, DeVille had to leave. Our friend DeVille was on his way to but thanks for hanging with us, DeVille. What have you been? What else? Let's talk about what you've been doing. While I've got a few minutes left since then. Now we know that you for a while you replaced Richie Castellano and Blue Oyster Cult. Do you still play with them or?
No, I didn't. I did not replace Richie. Richie was is a guitar player, and the reason why he played bass was because they needed a bass player at the time. So when I actually got to tour with Blue Oyster Cult, Richie was one of the other guitar players besides Bud Dharma.
Okay, all right, then let me go ahead and make a note here to myself in front of everyone not to get any information off of Wikipedia, okay? So,
hey, it happens.
I'll call myself out before anybody else, okay?
Yes.
Go ahead, Rudy.
Yes, sir.
It's Brian on the line again here.
Yeah,
As a Cuban American, because of your ethnic identity, you have to have some thoughts and reflections on the passing of Fidel Castro. Discuss.
You know, it's the way that I can look at it is because I have had. See, it's a very. Let's put it this way. If I'm talking to somebody who has had the experience that me and my family had in leaving a country, coming to a foreign country legally, you know, we got all the documentation. It took us about a year and a half to get all the sponsors and the visas and the passports, that even under a time where the country was a communist country, so everything was done very quietly. You know, you didn't want to create any suspicion that you were going to leave the country. Unless the person that I'm talking with has had a similar experience, they're never going to get the real picture of the suffering and all the sacrifices that are made by the parents and even that the children make, too, to adapt and adopt a new country, you know. So if somebody has had the same experience as me, I really don't need to explain it. And if somebody hasn't, it doesn't matter what I say, they'll never get it. So
you had a long period of daily terror, it sounds like.
Well, you don't leave everything you have behind to go into the complete unknown with your family just for the hell of it. There has to be a certain major motivation that there is no other choice. You have no choice. If you want your family to live in freedom, you have to make certain choices.
And how old were you, Rudy, when this happened to you?
I was a couple of months shy of being 11 years old.
Yeah.
Wow. So you were seeing all of this through the eyes of a pre-teenager. Wow.
Yeah, we left between Bay of Pigs and the October missile crisis.
Oh, man. Wow.
No.
You're welcome, Jen.
No, the thing is, it's you know, it's just, just recently I was listening to John Fugel saying a couple of days ago when George Takei was on there, and he was talking about the situation with his family, you know, being Japanese after Pearl Harbor, and how they came to their house. He was just a little boy, and they came with him and his little brother watching out the window when the military came with guns with shiny bayonets to take them out of their homes just because they were, even though they were third-generation Japanese here. And take them away. So it's like I just remember listening to George Takei telling that story, because about the movie based on the musical Allegiance about that time. And then this story. So there's so many things, you know, we don't know. And these things aren't that very far behind. Missile crisis, Bay of Pigs, Pearl Harbor. These things are not that far behind.
No.
And or far back in the past, but some people just don't remember them. But, you know, that's a lot. I think people are thinking about that more. Who knows when things change politically and so forth. Also, wanted to say before we get any further, too, Rudy, you have several teaching videos for bass players as well as for software. I think you have one, Acid for Nonlinear Editors, as well as.
No, actually, that was written by somebody else, and a dear friend of mine was one of my digital gurus, my main digital guru, Douglas Spotted Eagle. But I just wrote the foreword for it, so it was just a page. He wrote the whole book, yeah.
You're working in a digital animation in the last few years or three.
Yes, I have.
Yeah, I saw something that said you were a 3D technical director, and where does it say? You created the concert 3D animated opening for a video wall used in a European tour by Dio. Yeah.
Yes, I have. And other productions, yes.
Do you know Prairie Prince, the drummer? That's hard to say on a microphone, Prairie Prince.
Prairie
the Tubes and Todd Rundgren.
From the Tubes, yes.
Like, don't make me say it again. I know this microphone, I'm going to go just spit all over it. But, you know, he designed sets. You probably know this for other artists, concert sets, like for Shania Twain, Bette Midler, people like that, designs their whole concert stage for them. So I don't know. I'm just saying that, you know, maybe one day to see you, Prairie Prince, pulling together some major. Just thinking, it might be for Rick. It might be for Brian here. I don't know. It might be for
Yeah. At the moment, you know, I created content for various shows, but at the moment I have no real aspiration to continue doing that at that level.
It might be for Frank DeVille and the Gap Band. Who knows? But anyway, I just want to thank you again, everybody, for listening, and everyone who's called in, Rick Cornell, Brian Bingham, Frank DeVille, Greenfield, Rudy Sarzo's book, Off the Rails, Aboard the Crazy Train, The Blizzard of Oz. I'm going to tell them, first of all, Rudy, I'm going to apologize for my poor Spanish. But I'm going to say, buy it now, compralo ya.
Wow, that's
that
really
close?
Bad.
I thought he's been here before, doesn't he, Brian?
Yes.
University of Madrid in 2004. Thanks a lot. That's probably all I got. So, but in my defense, it was one of those semesters questioned to 4 weeks, so every day was a week's worth of work. So we did the history of Spain, the entire history of Spain, in 4 weeks. So, you know, that's the best I can do.
The good news, it's your show. You're absolved.
Yeah, but will you ever come back? You know, will the word on the street be, I don't know, when you start talking Spanish, it's time to hit the click button. But when I used to work in call center work, you know, it'd be like, oh, God, they're getting out of control. Let's transfer them to Mr. Click. Click, you know, and they'd be gone. So get Rudy's book. His website is rudysarzo.com, so you can go to the website, keep up with him. Rudy, what should people look out besides buying your book?
My website is under construction, so I would recommend going to Twitter or Facebook. And there's a couple of places that you can get my book, Off the Rails. It's available on Kindle and Amazon.com. on print version, but also if you want a autographed version of the book, you go to a website called Chromacast, Chromacast, Chromacast.com, and you can acquire the book there, signed by me.
Ah, okay. Very good. And, I got mine on Amazon. Actually, I got the free sample first. They give me just enough chapters to get into it, so I have to buy the book, which is a good idea. Very good idea. So we can keep up with you on Twitter. Oh, and by the way, thank you and to you and your fans for retweeting this on Twitter. I really did appreciate that as well.
Yeah.
And so we'll look for your book, and we'll know anything else you're going to do. You're going to be playing anytime soon? Will that be on
your I'll be playing this
Twitter,
weekend
well?
With the Guess Who in Sioux City, Iowa, at the Hard Rock Hotel. And then after that, New Year's Eve in Minneapolis, outside of Minneapolis, at the, the Treasure. It's a resort. I'll be there. New Year's Eve, Treasure Island Resort. Treasure Island Resort, right outside of Minneapolis. Yeah.
Okay. And fortunately, Rudy Sarzo is easy to find on Twitter, just RUDYSARZO. And you can find out where he's going to be and go see him and tell him how much you like the book, because by then you should have bought it and read it. Thanks again to you, Rudy, and to my folks that joined us here. It's kind of like a backstage lounge almost, isn't it, when we get conversation. DeVille, Brian, Rick, thank you so much. And Rudy, I hope you'll come back soon, please.
I love to, and I'd like to wish you and all your guests and listeners a Merry Christmas and blessed New Year.
You bet.
Same to you, Rudy. It's been a pleasure.